Quiz time. Okay, give me some help on who gets the hand up first. This one will be to name the, we're talking about the Noahic covenant, the covenant relating to the nations and how God works the nations out. The order of the five empires that are mentioned in Daniel. Who can give me those five empires? Put your hands up. Okay, give it a try.
Babylon.
Right.
Medo-Persian.
Right.
Greek.
Right.
Roman.
And
then you said the rock.
The millennial kingdom, Christ himself. That's right. How many of you think you're going to see Nebuchadnezzar in heaven? I think so. Listen to what he says. It's after God really did a number on him to humiliate him. You know, he's out there with the cattle and all the rest. And verse 34 of Daniel 4, at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High God and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. No one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? At the same time, my reason returned to me. And for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. My counselors and nobles resorted to me. I was restored to my kingdom. And excellent majesty was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all of whose works are truth and his ways justice. And those who walk in pride, he is able to put down. That's not bad for the King of Babylon, is it? And that's the God of the nations. We're looking at that. The parties in the covenant, the Noahic covenant, God, Noah, and his sons, all beasts, and all of mankind, because this is a promise that continues. The content of the covenant on page 2, human government, never another worldwide flood, the rainbow. And we see that covenant, that unconditional covenant, still in place, the continuing aspect of the covenant. This is what is interesting. This covenant is in place between God and the nations and the beasts and all of mankind presently. He is the one who arranges government. And John 19 talks about that. Jesus is standing before Pilate. If there was ever a time that it seemed like Satan had control of things and God's will wasn't being executed, it's when his son is going through this very unfair trial. There was nothing really legal about what they did. Six trials, none of them worked right. But the fact of the matter is, Jesus says in the midst of that, Pilate, are you not speaking to me? Pilate says, do you not know that I have power to crucify you and power to release you? Jesus answered, you could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. That's a powerful statement. All authority is delegated authority. Even the authority that Satan has is within the limits of God. Can you prove that for me?
Job,
yeah, you can go thus far. It's two right now. You're doing really well. A student. You can go thus far, but you can't take his life.
Also, temptation too.
Pardon?
Temptation says all kingdoms have been given to me.
Yeah, all kingdoms have been given to me. He's on a leash. Paul prayed three times to remove the thorn in the flesh. How's that described? A messenger of Satan. Satan's trying to get to Paul. And God uses what Satan's trying to do to keep Paul humble and dependent on him. He uses Satan for his good purposes. Oh, so, you know, he's in control of all of it. And this is the statement. I have referred to Acts 17 a number of times when it comes to the establishment of the nations, which he does under Noah, gives them authority. They work out according to God's eternal purposes. Romans 13 is a central passage that goes all the way back to the establishment of the Noahic covenant. How up to date is this right now? Well, here's how much. You pull out of the parking lot today, make a right turn on Galbraith, is it? And floor it. And you look in your mirror and you see a car with lights flashing. And the man gets out, woman as well. Do they have the neat hats? I love the state troopers when they get out. They put their hat on, you know. Have you ever noticed this? They really look slick. Come on, come to you. You know you're in trouble. What feeling do you have when you look in your mirror and the lights are there? Oh, goes all the way back to Genesis. This is the truth. This is what we're talking about. It's that real. And as that man walks up to your car and you put your window down, you recognize that he is as Romans tells us, listen to who he is. There is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. And when he's walking up to our window with pad in hand, it goes all the way back to Genesis. We're under the Noahic covenant even now. I delegate authority. All authority is delegated by God. Look what these people are called. They are God's ministers, attending continually to the very thing. So when they come up to our car, we should say, how are you, Pastor Officer? Right. We wouldn't quite do that because of our ecclesiology, but that's a servant of God standing next to us. Doesn't much seem like it, does it? What is reaching down to us in a simple little thing like a ticket is the authority that God has put into human government. And when we look at a rainbow, we think of the Noahic Covenant. The Noahic Covenant puts authority into national government, and as it spills down into local government as well. They are God's servants. Now, we should consequently have respect to them, and we'll come to that directly. So it goes on today. That's what I'm saying. When I read the newspapers and there is the USSR, and now it is not a union any longer. There are all these individual little states, all the Istan states, you know. I don't even know them all. Does anybody know all those? Boy, you know, how many are there? The total republics, how many were there? I don't, how many stans? Five of them. You know, it's an interesting concept, you know. That all happens according to God's timetable. They all reflect delegated authority. It's not just our good delegated authority. All the nations function under the delegated authority of God. Some well, some not well. Some fairly, some not. None totally fairly. We know that. Now, a little political aside, the purpose of government on God's part is to protect those who do well and to punish those who do evil. That's a general concept of government. That's the level of government within the city of Cincinnati, within the county, within the state, within the federal, all levels of government. And it works on every level. When we get to international government, there is a particular responsibility that comes on powerful international government to influence others in this world for good. It would be wrong. Pardon? Follow my logic. It would be wrong for our federal level of government to allow a local level to function doing evil things. When God has entrusted a nation like Babylon or any of the other nations with revelation of God, it's up to that country to influence the world in that way. There is a global dimension to all of this, which is one of the issues that is before us presently. It changed. When George Washington came on the scene, he said of this new government, mind your own business. Don't influence the rest of the world. We know that we have broader responsibilities as Christians than just what is below us. And Peter will say that as we get into this application. Honor all men, especially the household of God. So there is this strong concept of influence for good, for evil. That's what government is all about. That is why many governments stood up and said, we will stop this Holocaust thing. Was that a good thing to do? Think so? Yeah. There was no threat. Really no threat. We were close to being threatened here in the Second World War, but didn't quite make it. We could have been isolationists. But there was terrible moral wrong in the process. And countries that had a recognition of good and evil should have acted on that. Gets complicated because helping Judeo-Christian ethic countries who had some degree of commitment to right and wrong, we had another country that was committed to as bad atrocities as were being executed under Hitler. You know, you get strange bedfellows in it all. It's not a perfect world, even when governments are involved in a moral war. But the purpose of government on every level is to influence for good in the sense of protecting the innocent, punishing the guilty. And that goes all the way back to Noah. Now, what is important here, it's not such a big issue presently, but during the time of the Vietnam War, there was a lot of discussion, is that in fact a moral war? When I was growing up, we had one of the bases for conscientious objectors in Baltimore, and numbers of them ended up coming to our assembly. They had a peacetime assignments that were, in reality, worse than going to war. But there they were. They had a conscience about that. And one of the things we have to understand is the role of government as God has outlined the role of government. Yes, God has said to government, you can go to the point of taking life to protect the innocent and to punish the guilty. That's the major role of government. We all have to come to grips with that one way or another. It is even part of the process of our national involvement in what we're doing presently. This is a biblical ingredient in making up our minds as to what we should do nationally and what we should not. So it becomes a tricky little thing. Does that make some sense? I knew when I ventured forth that would be a little questionable. But I think authority does not. Authority matches the influence that you have. That's what I'm saying. Matches the influence that you have personally, governmentally. And the people we touch should be touched by our perspective of what is right and wrong based on the Bible. That's why God put them there. They carry the gun. Thankfully, it's a Glock gun in most police forces present. One of the trustees of school sent me a brochure for the Glock gun. You know, it's a big-time pistol. And it had 100 people standing, 100 police officers standing in a row like this with a Glock gun like this. And the banner said, Glock rules the world. My Glock relative was the shoemaker, not the gun maker. So that's the way it is. It's the church and the covenant. This relates to nations. Here's where we are in relationship to the nations. I exhort, first of all, that supplication. This is easy to remember. We pray, pay, and obey. That's our relationship, the continuing relationship we have to the nations, which are God's nations, for the king and all who are in authority. Why are we praying? What's the point of our praying? Lead a quiet and peaceable life. For what reason? Pardon?
Godliness and reverence.
What's the outcome of that? So that the gospel can go forth unhindered. For it is good and acceptable in the sight of God, who desires all men to be saved. So he says, pray for peace and safety. Because God desires people to be saved. It's a lot easier to do that without the bullets flying around. Although God uses that in many ways to promote his evangelistic zeal. So we're to pray for a quiet life, that we can live in peace, because God's interested in seeing people get saved. We are to pay for them. In that same chapter in Romans 13, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. No, that's what Jesus says, I'm sorry. Render therefore to all their due taxes to whom taxes are due. And then in Peter tells us to obey them. Now there's an interesting concept here. Are we under these governments? Are we? And Peter will say something. Listen to this. I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims. What's a sojourner, a pilgrim?
Someone who's heading
home. They're going to another place. Now, does Paul support that? He will say in Philippians, our citizenship is where? In heaven. And Paul in Corinthians says, you're ambassadors. We're in foreign territory. Are we or aren't we? Yes, we are. This home is not my world. I'm just passing through. But what's the other side of that story?
We are under governmental authority.
He's telling us, therefore, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. It's a terrible verse, isn't it? Yeah, well, that's right. They give you five and you take five, right? Oh, it's a tough verse. Every ordinance of man. Peter also said, to an ordinance of man, it's better to obey God than man when they're in conflict. That does not happen often in any form of government. In some it does. But not often. Look what he says in 16, though. As free. Free from what? You're pilgrims and... Pardon?
Free from the consequences of the law.
He's not really talking about the law here, though. We'll come on that soon in Galatians. Under the Abrahamic covenant. He's talking about our relationship to governments here. You see, we're above the governments of the earth. We have a higher government. And Peter says that. Better to obey God than man. You're an ambassador, Paul will say. We're strangers and pilgrims, but we're here. And be subject. And don't say, because I'm a Christian, I don't do any of these things that are part of the governmental role. Well, I can't vote. I'm a Christian. Well, you can vote. Should you, is the question. My father didn't. I do. Varying opinions on that. Did Paul ever claim his citizenship? Sure. He worked the legal system like crazy. He drops a little word to his nephew, go tell the commander, you know. And the next thing you turn around, you got all the Roman forces, those Jews that said, we're not going to eat until we see Paul killed, and a couple hundred soldiers escort Paul out. That had to be a discouraging day. You know? I tell you what. Well, he shouldn't have done that because he trusted God and not government. No. He's going to be accused. He said, I'm a Roman citizen. Oh. Everything stopped. He appeals to a Roman magistrate, and from that time onward in his travels, he is not bothered by the Roman Empire. That free statement follows him around. The Jews pester him, but not the Romans. The Romans protect him. To Caesar he must go. He functioned under the human government. It seemed to me he was a little bit of glad that he could say, I am a Roman, freeborn. That was better than the officer he was addressing, who purchased his freedom. So we are both. Which are we most?
Heavenly citizenship. But this thing established back in Genesis with human government impacts on the church as well. Honor all people. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the king. So we don't go through life just saying we're pilgrims. We also say we're citizens. It's a nice balance. Noahic covenant touches us today. It's in the newspaper. The Abrahamic covenant's really in the newspaper. It's called the Palestinian issues. We don't get away from it. So let's look at this one. Abraham is the second most mentioned person in the Bible. Who do you think is first? Lord Jesus. Abraham's next. A lot of stuff related to Abraham. Quoted all over the place. Important character. And this is an important covenant. They all are. Obviously, if God makes it, I think it's important. This is a dominating one. Identification. The covenant made with Abraham and his descendants, the Jews, establishing the basis for the Hebrew race, the nation of Israel, the land for the nation of Israel, and the seed Christ, from whom all the nations of the earth would be blessed. This is an important covenant. Remember what God is doing. He starts out the second time with Noah, and he says, you know, Noahic covenant, they're the nations. Now we're going to focus on one nation. And the Old Testament is full of that focus. This is the Judeo part of the Judeo-Christian revelation of God. And the whole Testament is going to deal with what is done here. Now, there's a lot of detail given to this covenant. It's repeated over and over. There are different dimensions given to it. Let's just look at some of them. The statement of the covenant is seen in the first segment. Now, the Lord said to Abraham, get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Then the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, to you, your descendants, I will give this land. And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. God will save the nation of Israel. Israel only have I known among the nations. What does that mean?
There's an intimacy of a covenant.
There's an intimacy of a covenant that is true only of the nation of Israel. It's not he didn't know cognitively of all the other nations. God is not up in heaven saying, bring me an atlas. I understand Israel, but what's that nation to the south of them? No. He knows all that. But this is a relational kind of thing. It's the covenantal relationship. There is no other nation, kingdom on earth of which it can be said God gave that nation their land. How did we get our land? We took it. And that's what we see happening down through history. He who carries Teddy Roosevelt said, speaks softly, carry a big stick. The guy with the biggest stick has always won. You know, it's the way it is. You hear these stories about peaceful tribes out there who never go to war. What do we say about that? It's not true. It's not the way it is. It's not the way it's ever been since the fall. God says that to one nation only and makes that promise to Abraham. This is a great promise. He says, here are the nations, and I'm going to focus on one, and I'm going to make that nation just like I made all the other ones, and not in the same purpose and intimacy. He's going to make this nation. Out of this comes the name Jew. The best I have seen is the concept Hebrew comes from crossing the river, the Habiru. The Jewish person may be related to the city of Jerusalem in its beginning. A whole entity. Disraeli was asked to prove that there is a God. Do you know what he said?
The Jew.
And right now, they're not a real favored nation, are they? Have you noticed that? They're going to be preserved. So he makes this. And this is going to be the channel of blessing for all the world. Now, it's not just God promised. There's a geography in the promise. And the next one, you have it particularly. It gets even more specific. Northward, southward, eastward, westward. Lift up your eyes, Abraham. Lot can have that. You lift up your eyes. This is the land that I will give you. Later, we'll see the extent of that land more specifically in geographical terms. The Middle East, the center of cradle of civilization, and here is part of that that will be the nation of Israel. This land is your land. We sing it. It's not really true directly. For the nation of Israel, it is true. The nature of the covenant. This is a great picture. The Lord appears to Abraham. Abram said, verse 2, Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus? Abraham said, you have given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir. And behold, the Lord came to him, saying, this one shall not be your heir, but one who will come for your own body shall be your heir. Then he brought him outside and said, look now toward heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them. And he said to him, so shall your descendants be. And he believed in the Lord, and it was counted him for righteousness. This is repeated about Abraham a number of times. Then he said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldees to give you this land to inherit it. And he said, Lord God, how shall I know that I will inherit it? So he said to him, bring me a three-year-old heifer, a three-year-old female goat, a three-year-old ram, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. Then he brought all these to him and cut them in two down the middle and placed each piece opposite the other. Didn't cut the birds in two. They were too small. And when the vultures came down on the carcasses, Abraham drove them away. Do you see this picture? How will I know this? God says, well, let's get ready. I'm going to show you how you're going to know this. Get all these animals. Make a sacrifice. Offer them. Cut them apart. Divide them. Make a path. Half here, half there. So Abraham went and did this. What's going to happen in this thing? What is this symbolic of? Symbolic of a covenant being established. We saw that there was blood involved. It is a contract to cut, to divide. This is the very picture here. It is a path divided just like this. And he's got it ready. And all these dead animals are divided. And the vultures are coming around. Can you see Abraham there with a big cloth shaking him? Get out of here. Get out. Get out. And he does that. Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abraham. And behold, horror and great darkness fell upon him. Then he said to Abraham, know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in the land that is not there and will serve them and so on. And they'll come out with great possessions. And as for you, you will go to your fathers in peace. You shall be buried in a good old age, but in the fourth generation they shall return here. For the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. He says, now I'm going to prove I'm going to do all that. You ask me how you're going to know it. Here it is. And came to pass, this had to be some scene, when the sun went down and it was dark, that behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch. Smoke and light. Will we see that later? Where will we see that?
Moses,
yeah. The same day, there appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed between those pieces. Who passed between those pieces? God himself. On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I have given this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, Perizzites, as J. Vernon McGee always used to say in the electric lights, the Rephaim. It gives them this land. How will you know it? How's this? And God walks right down the aisle. Now, normally, both covenanting parties would walk down the aisle. But a deep sleep comes upon Abraham. What's the figure of that?
Abraham
couldn't, didn't have to. Blessing, I will bless you. In Hebrews 6, that is chosen, that Abraham received a blessing. That takes us in later to the unconditional nature of this covenant. So Abraham has this confirmed. It's this land that becomes the land of the children of Israel. How up to date is this? Well, we'll see the present day application of this as we get to it. The parties of the covenant. And I emphasize that I will make my covenant between me and you. As for me, behold, my covenant is with you, my covenant between me and you, and now your descendants in verse 7, after you and in their generations for an everlasting covenant. This one goes the whole way. And God said to Abraham, as for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you throughout their generations. And there is the sign of the covenant, which is circumcision. And we see that it's the covenant that is made particularly involving the son of Sarah, Isaac. There's a seed of the covenant in a positive sense. Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. And we know the incident that took place here, the laughing of Sarah, and it was a logical thing for her to say, this can't be. She was too old to bear children. And Abraham was old as well. But it was a miracle. This is not an uncommon kind of miracle in the Bible, is it? We'll see Elizabeth and Zechariah, the same setting. And then even a greater miracle. What's the greater miracle of conception? Virgin birth. God can do these things. Positively, it's a seed from Abraham and Sarah. There is another seed. God said to Abraham, the seed of the covenant negatives, do not utter be displeasing in your sight because of lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice, for in Isaac you shall be called. Yet I will make a nation of the son of the bondwoman because he is your seed. And that accounts for a lot of history right now. That's the debate that is taking place in the Middle East. Whose land is it? Whose land is it? Abraham is the Jewish nation that received this land promised to Israel, promised to Abraham. But there is contention. There has always been contention between the boys. And it's as current as today's paper. The seed of the covenant is to be preserved. In your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. And the covenant comes down with blessing for all. Every nation is blessed because of the blessing of Abraham. The seed in the New Testament. When we come to the book of Galatians, there's a lot of discussion over this promise made. The allegory of Sarah and Hagar is a central passage, a central segment of the book of Galatians. And the seed is specified here. He does not say, and to seeds as many, but of one. And to your seed, who is Christ. Now that's an amazing concept. The whole argument of the book of Galatians as to Christ coming is built on the plural or singular. And when God makes promise to Abraham, he says, in you and in your seed, and it's this particular line, Isaac downward. He doesn't say many, he says one. And that one is Christ. It is that specific. Galatians 4, it is spelled out more specifically. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty by which Christ has made us free, and don't be a legalist. The content of the covenant, this covenant with Abraham, is the forming of the Hebrew race, the nation of Israel, the land boundaries of the nation, the seed who is Christ, and blessing to Ishmael. God makes promise in this whole setting, not only to the promised line, but of Ishmael, he's going to make great nations as well. In Hebrews 6, as I made reference already, for when God made a promise to Abraham, because he could swear by no one greater, he swore by himself, saying, blessing I will bless you. Now what about today? The continuing aspect of the covenant. This becomes an interesting concept for us. How would you say the covenant's functioning, this Abrahamic covenant is functioning with the children of Israel presently?
Miraculously.
Pardon?
Miraculously.
Expatiate.
Before 1940, there was no nation of Israel.
There was no.
It is there again.
It's there.
No one's speaking Hebrew. Today they speak Hebrew. It's an amazing, unprecedented event in world history.
Yeah. Harry Truman did a good thing, didn't he? That was big.
One of the amazing things is to read some of the old assembly writers, you know, the Kellys and so forth, talking about the prophecy, and they all emphatically talked about the nation of Israel, and there wasn't even a shred or a...
You would not... We have to realize this future for Israel that came to be included in the charts on the back wall out there, that was done when there was no nation. I mean, they, what's this business? Talk about an act of faith. It is. It's an amazing thing. And we dispensationalists got all excited in 1947. Didn't we? Whoa, there it is. I was at seminary during the Six-Day Wars. Six-Day War. When Jerusalem is retaken by the Jews. I'll never forget the final chapel we had that year, 1967. I remember it well, because I had one more year left at Dallas. Zane Hodges, good friend of mine, good brother, with a little B and capital B, gave the message. And he said to us, gentlemen, we will not meet in this school next year. Jerusalem is no longer trodden underfoot by the Gentiles. The time of the Gentiles has ended. The Lord is coming. John Walford had him give the first message the next semester. It was beautiful. He referred to the passage in Acts where they burned their books of magic. And Jerusalem still is trodden underfoot by the Gentiles as far as control. A witness, is it 150 million or 350 million given to the Palestine liberation just recently? Big amount. Three. Nationally, probably a good thing to do. It is still under the control of Gentile powers. That would be how we would explain that. It's not just a symbolic thing, it's a real thing. The nation of Israel is God's nation. Well, where's the promises to Israel? I suppose they would be driven into the sea again. Would that change our theology?
No.
It really wouldn't. We are pleased to see it. Hey, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. You remember what God said to Abraham? Those who bless you, I will bless. What else? Those who curse you, I will curse. I know which side of that I want to be on, individually and nationally. You know, that is a critical issue, to be sure. But in God's dealing with the nation of Israel, where is he now? What has he done with Israel?
He's preserved Israel.
He's preserved it for sure.
He's preserved the nation.
And it will never... not be. But what's he doing with Israel now? There's a passage right in the middle of Romans that tells us, Romans 9, 10, 11. What's it say?
Blindness.
Yeah, blindness in part has come to Israel. For what purpose?
Makes them envious.
What else?
Bringing the Gentiles.
God's kind of, this is the way we look at it, he's put Israel on hold. He hasn't annihilated them. Are the promises of Abraham still in place for Israel? Yeah, they really are. But they're in a holding pattern presently. He's doing something in the nations. He's doing Romans 9, 10, and 11. Israel, whom he has foreknown, has he cast them off? No, he hasn't cast them off. But blindness in part has come to Israel. He said in part because Jews still get saved. And he saved Jewish folk with us. Blindness in part. There is still a faithful remnant. Paul in Galatians will talk about the Israel of God. Who's the Israel of God? Saved Jews who are now in the body of Christ. And talks about that blessing upon you and upon the Israel of God. They're part of the church. Neither bond nor free, male nor female, Jew nor Greek, but still their ethnic origin, their race origin is Jewish. So there is this suspension of direct involvement. And the Old Testament talks about you'll be many days without a priest, without a tabernacle. That's where they are. It's a synagogue, no temple. Synagogues only came in the intertestamental period. It's all they've had since. Be many days without those things. No sacrifice. You know this religion that had bulls and goats and calves and turtle doves and all the rest haven't offered a sacrifice in generations. And yet they're keeping the law. How are they? There's no priest. There are no sacrifices. There's no temple, a synagogue only. Well, none of these things are executed presently. Will they be again? Seems to me they're going to be in the millennium, too. A little different purpose, probably, memorial instead of looking forward to the cross. So they're sort of hanging out there right now while God is doing something else. Blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come. Look at verse 32. For God has committed them to disobedience.